My name is Jillian Flick, and I am the 2024 Global President of the Women's Energy Network, also known as WEN. WEN is a global organization of professionals working across the energy value chain who are connected locally and networked globally. This podcast is dedicated to featuring our talented WEN members in the energy community. I hope you enjoy today's episode and learn something new.
Hello again, WEN listeners. Beth Gold-Kreller here. Today, we explore the dynamic intersection of women's leadership and sustainable energy. As you know, the Women's Energy Network is a global organization dedicated to advancing women in the energy industry. With a diverse membership of professionals working in various sectors, WEN is committed to providing networking opportunities, professional development, and a platform for women to thrive in the energy sector.
In 2024, the Women's Energy Network developed a partnership with Solar Energy International, an organization at the forefront of renewable energy education. For over three decades, SEI has been empowering individuals around the world with the knowledge and skills needed to embrace solar energy solutions. With a dedicated focus on disadvantaged communities, SEI's impactful programs Women's, Veterans, Native American, and Hispanic aim to foster inclusivity within the solar industry, ensuring that the benefits of solar energy are accessible to all.
Now envision the potent impact when these two powerhouses join forces. WEN's steadfast commitment to fostering gender diversity, coupled with SEI's Women in Solar Power program, which offers expertise in solar education for women and non-binary professionals, creates a synergy that's propelling real change towards industry diversity. We are excited to talk with Caro Fernandez, Solar Technical Instructor with Solar Energy International, also known as SEI. We are thrilled to have her on the WEN podcast and learn more about her and what SEI offers, including the benefits our WEN SEI membership offers our members. Let's welcome Caro to the podcast.
Hi, Caro.
Hi, ladies. How's it going?
Nice to see you. Nice to hear you.
Really happy to be here, really excited to be talking to you all and representing SEI and all these ladies that are behind the women's program as well.
Well, Caro, we like to begin our podcast by getting to know our guests. Can you tell us a little bit about your personal career journey? How did you get involved with SEI?
That started a very long time ago, over a decade ago. I was working in solar in Costa Rica. And SEI, always being the pioneers, they were starting a campus in Costa Rica, and they wanted to find a local that would help them develop that and be an instructor there. And the university they were partnering with, I had installed a system for that university. And so it just was an easy connection between SEI to the university, to me, and I am forever grateful.
That's really cool. So did you started out there. How did you get involved with SEI itself?
Well, specifically, it was for this training program in Costa Rica. They were starting their Latin American program, and they decided to start in Costa Rica, like I mentioned. And so the involvement was they ran me through their training program. So I know firsthand what this training program can do to a person's career. And then they asked me to get involved as an instructor. And we started teaching in Costa Rica and then all over Latin America. And then it just became natural and organic for me to start teaching in the US. And that's kind of how that evolved.
I think it's fun to see when you invest in yourself and you do something for a company and then they start to invest back in you. It's a cyclical investment usually ends up paying off for everybody involved. So congratulations for being a part of that story. I do have a question. So as we all know, this solar industry is currently at the forefront of a big transformation, right? It's not just about harnessing power of the sun anymore. It's about also cultivating sustainable futures and empowering individuals. And there's so many different catalysts for change. Can you guide our listeners through solar industry landscape, like the entire industry landscape, and kind of talk about the technologies that are employed?
Yeah, that is maybe the broadest question in solar I have ever been asked. It's funny because it used to be such a small mom and pop shop kind of industry, not even an industry. Now we call it an industry, but it wasn't. And so I've seen it over the last 15 years. I've been working in this and I've seen it grow so much. It's become massive. So way back when, started in solar in 2009, and we were doing really small systems, mostly off-grid. And I was already kind of late to the game. Like the real pioneers started 25, 30 years ago. And they thought it had changed by the time I started working in solar. But the last 15 years, it's been massive. The massive change, I think, has been due to governments getting involved. All systems in our economy are pushing, thankfully, for more renewables. And so that's obviously been seen. We have seen it reflected directly in the growth of the industry, now into an industry. And obviously that reflects all over the products we use, the size of systems we install, the types of systems we install. And so the industry is extremely broad.
I was just wondering, are there technological differences between the solar I see on my neighbor's roof or my roof versus what, you know, you would see commercially installed? What are some of the, I've heard there's like three different types of solar that you can use in communities. Can you talk us through some of the, I don't know, just the categorizations of solar that are out there?
Interesting. I haven't heard of this like very specific three different categories, but I love this question. I think that I would start answering that question by saying the solar module itself, what some people call a module, other people call it a panel, that is really the same for anywhere. The technology in itself, the little cells that make up the module, that's also the same. And we live in an AC world, alternate current, but PV, photovoltaics, produces energy in direct current. And so for any system that we want to interconnect to our world, to our AC world, we will always see a component called an inverter. So the parts and pieces that put the modules to the inverter together and maybe connected to the grid, they're all the same functions, but they may have different sizes, different specific functionalities for what we need them to do in a system. But really, like the conversion, the power conversion parts are always there. And then there are differences, huge differences, I think, specifically in the safety part of things. When you install a system up on a person's roof, on a home, the safety requirements for that are a little bit different than if you install it out in the field in the middle of nowhere, because obviously you're putting a DC system and typically high voltage at this point on a person's roof. And so we'll have things like rapid shutdown. And so the National Electrical Code has different requirements for systems that go up on residential roofs versus commercial, and commercial versus a ground mount in a field. But the technology is not that different. The needs, the power conversion systems are not that different.
My 13-year-old self is just remembering back. I used to walk uphill to school both ways, back and forth. I was one of those people that actually did walk up a really steep hill. But on halfway up the hill, the only reason I remember is in my town, there was the only solar panel on the roof. And it's interesting to me that the technology that was used there is so similar to the technology that we see nowadays. And I know I understand that there was so much out there, but what about from a supply chain aspect? How is the supply chain changed? Because obviously there's so much more demand across the entire industry, and I'm talking the broader energy industry, that I just wanted to make sure, have you guys run into the same supply challenges that maybe the rest of us have when we get into installing or getting to the materials that are needed?
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. From what country is producing what and what's going on politically in those countries, or even environmentally in those countries, that has affected supply chains to, well, pandemics. A global pandemic affected every industry, I would say. Some, but solar was greatly affected. And then also politics locally here. And so where are we buying our modules from and where are they coming from? And I'm sure you've all read the news in the last 5, 6 years, 7 years, and how that's been kind of a roller coaster. And we actually have a term in solar. We call it the solar coaster because it is, and because we're kind of making it up as we go. It's a new industry. Everything about it is being made up as we go in terms of, like, the fossil fuels industry has been around for how long, right? There are systems in place now. We know what were hazards and we mitigated them. In solar, we have been learning. And the chapter in the NEC that has changed the most in the past decade has been 690, which is the article that focuses on solar energy. And right now, actually, you all asked before about the technologies and the configurations. We haven't even touched on batteries and energy storage, which is the next big thing. I mean, it's already the big thing. We need it. Yeah, we totally need it for our grid to function with so much renewables being injected into it that depends on a cloud passing by or not, or the wind dying out momentarily. Just to go back to the NEC, these articles are the ones that are changing the most because the technology is changing the most, because there's no precedent for the way renewables are having the percentage penetration that they have in the grid. And so we're really figuring it out as we're working on it.
And I assume, first of all, I assume Maggie is jumping up and down in her chair because you mentioned the battery storage, which is her life. But also, secondly, I assume that this is also impacting from like a regulation perspective, right? I'm assuming that there's more and more regulation, but is that in fact the case? Or is it for us, we can't move without, and we can't sneeze without being regulated. So I was just curious what it's like on your side of the world.
It's definitely happening. It's so funny that you mentioned that because standards are popping up everywhere and regulations popping up everywhere because we're recognizing the hazards. And as we install bigger and bigger systems at higher voltages and more people are working on those systems and maybe they're not qualified as they should be, or maybe the equipment was too new and we were all guinea pigs, and that's also not okay. I mean, it's part of developing technology, but it can be dangerous. And so, yes, absolutely, more and more regulations are coming up by the minute. And, you know, sometimes regulations come up after the product has been created. That's been happening a lot in the last decade in solar. Some manufacturer comes up with an interesting product that changes things, and there's no regulation for it. It doesn't exist because we had never even thought about this product. And so it's been really interesting, never boring.
What's the cycle for a solar project? I mean, several of us have oil and gas backgrounds. So we think of like finding and development costs and, you know, exploring and developing and getting into production. What is the life cycle? If you're planning, you know, a capital investment, when are you going to see returns? What's the payback look like?
Those are good questions, and I'm not sure I'm the most qualified person to answer. I do electrical design and training and all of like the hands-on part of things. I have never sold a solar module in my life. I don't know how much they cost. So I am definitely not qualified to answer that, but I can say that I work for a big utility company, and they also own a lot of fossil fuel assets, and they've also developed a lot of fossil fuel assets, and the structure that they use is very similar. There's in the development stage, there's an ROI studies. There are also studies of, well, resource itself. Is the resource available here? Is there going to be a faster return of investment or not? Can we find personnel? Can we find, I mean, is the soil good enough for supporting what we're going to try to do here? So all of these things, it's the due diligence, right? And then as we develop it, it's very different depending on the size. I don't know that fossil fuels can scale as small as solar can. And so I think there's a big difference there. Like if you're developing a residential system or a commercial system on a rooftop, the due diligence is going to be simpler than if you're developing a 350 megawatt system that's going to connect to a high voltage grid, right? So I think the scales are going to affect a lot of what you see in terms of the process of development and then the installation itself. But when we're talking utility scale, I would say the steps themselves are going to be very similar.
Carl, I'm so glad you mentioned batteries. If I was a utility matchmaker, I would pair batteries and solar. They make the perfect pair and have shown and demonstrated a great business case, especially with weather instability. We have a lot of listeners who may or may not know a lot about this industry. So for those who are eager to dive into the world of solar energy but don't know where to start, what are some effective and accessible ways to begin their learning journey?
That's a great segue to training, because that is definitely what we're encouraging, not only at SEI. So I wear many hats. I am an SEI instructor, and I'm going to speak highly of SEI, of course. I'm also a utility scale trainer for a company that does really large scale solar. And we hire and onboard people all the time, and many of them don't have any knowledge of electricity or of solar. And we onboard them with training. Like, really, training is the key to workforce development. There's no other way. You can get experience like the way I did long before I ever met SEI, but that takes so long. And we don't have that luxury anymore in solar. And when people are wanting to jumpstart a career, training is definitely the answer.
Well, where can they go for training, or what kind of training should they get? Is it more on the technical side? Are there resources that maybe are just industry specific?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question too. So I would say when people come to me and ask about training, I usually ask them, well, what do you want to do? What's your background? What are you interested in? Because way back when, all of us did everything in each and every system. Like, we bought the equipment, we installed it, we also commissioned it, and then we inspected it, and then we did the maintenance and now everything. Now, it's an industry. And so that's not the case. If you're working on the finances part of it, you're going to want to go deep into that area. If you're working in the marketing side of it, that's your area. If you're working in the technical areas like installation, that's going to be completely different than design, completely different than operations and maintenance. And so at this point, the industry is so developed that there's definitely specific focused training more and more available. So it really depends on what you want to do. So for example, at SEI, the program, if you go in through the 101 level course, which is like the first course you're going to take, that one will give you a little bit of design, a little bit of installation, and it probably won't go into sales. Like, if you want to go into sales and ROI and supply chain questions, this is not the course for you. So you have to find the course that is the best for what, for your goals, your career goals, right? And it is that granular at this point.
It does sound, though, there's a lot of overlap with the other areas of the energy sector. So when you're mentioning all these different business functions and technical functions, it sounds like there's some synergies there. I mean, I would like to better understand what career possibilities there are in the solar sector today, because just me personally, I have friends that are considering, you know, a longer term strategy for their career. Perhaps they want to transition from traditional oil and gas to renewables, more specifically solar. What type of pathways are an option for someone considering a role in sector? Are there certain skills that they should, you know, look to refine that would help them transition into a solar sector-based career?
You know, that's a great question too. You're asking great questions. I would start at the Solar Energy Industries Association, SEIA. That is a national organization that has been kind of tying us all together in the industry under one umbrella to understand what our industry is, how many people work in it, what are the career paths. And so SEIA has great career maps, and you can start looking for the different options out there for you through them on their website. I would definitely suggest beginning there. Now, if you're more technically inclined, which is going to be the area I know more of because that's been my area, you would also want to go to NAPCEP, the North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners, and their certifications, which have really interesting requirements and what experience you need to have gathered to even sit through a certification test, what type of training and how much training you must have gathered before sitting through these tests. But these certifications are peer recognized, and they really help understand what careers are out there and what type of certifications you may want to get. If you wanted to go in through to the finances or marketing or sales areas, I think for those, it's very much like other industries. I mean, how much is there to it? At that point, you're selling energy or buying energy, right? It's kilowatt hours. And so I don't know that I could make that huge of a differentiation, except the main difference is if you're talking about grid-connected systems, there's interaction with the grid, which hasn't been done the same way as it's being done with other generation plants. The big ones, yes, but the smaller systems, it's a little different. So maybe you want to go into your local policies and understand how the net metering or energy exchange happens with your utility. That's really good information to have. If you want to work in a specific region, if you want to work nationally or even globally, then obviously learning about them all. It's so broad. It's like, it's the energy industry.
Definitely, there are a lot of transferable skills. I see so many people moving from natural gas to wind or solar or other areas. It's just more about how you talk maybe, than it is about what you know, right? I do think that it'd be interesting for us to pivot a little bit and talk about some of the challenges that are facing the solar industry. You mentioned before that, you know, people are newer to the industry. There are technicians that maybe aren't as experienced out there because the technology is so new, right? How can you learn something when it's not even necessarily designed? Could you talk a little bit about some of the challenges and what your thoughts are on them, and maybe some ways that we can at least mitigate some of the risks that are associated with these challenges?
I would want to focus on the main challenge for, in my opinion, is safety. It's, and you touched on it briefly. It's like keeping people safe as they're entering the industry. And I'm obviously speaking about technicians. We don't need to keep people in the finances or marketing areas safe the same. I mean, same.
Oh, I mean, God. Paper cuts are real, but I get it. Yes. No, you're good. You're good.
I would say the main challenge we're dealing with right now, and of course, this is biased to my work and my environment, is safety. We're onboarding a massive amount of people to work on these systems, and there are only a few training channels, and we need more. We need a massive amount of people trained. And so what's happening is that we're transferring people, reskilling people from one industry to another. And maybe you've worked on energy systems, maybe wind, for years. I say as an industry, maybe now throw you into a 350 megawatt solar site and say, here, operate it. And that's irresponsible. And I know most companies are not doing that. Thankfully, they're trying to provide the training, but that means that it slows down the onboarding, right? If you're a responsible company that wants to provide the right kind of training for safety, which thankfully so many are, I'm seeing this left and right, that slows down the growth. But the growth is going to happen anyways. And so it's like this kind of a catch-22 situation we're in. And so hopefully companies, I would say a big challenge is hopefully that companies don't skip safety and really maintain their growth, the scale at which they grow, based on the scale at which they can onboard qualified technicians that will be safe in the field working on these systems.
I understand the people impact, right? Like, we need to make sure that they're safe, that the people that they're operating for are safe and everything like that. But there's also, you know, companies have to make an investment and they have to start growing. And I think that when we get into a new market, growth can be super fast. And how do you change it from fast, great growth to sustainable growth in a safe manner?
One of the challenges that we see too that could be related to this growth situation is that as we grow, we maybe have technicians that know a lot about site or this technology, but they quickly grow into other positions. They grow into positions of management because they are those kinds of leaders. They are thought leaders. They're knowledgeable. And we take them out of that technician position and we make them managers, and we have gaps. And we hire those with new people that are not as highly qualified. And so what's happening a lot, we scale, and new technicians are not as qualified, and we don't have the old technicians to have the time to train the new technicians. And so what we're trying to accomplish at AES, at SEI, I think as an industry, ACP, SEIA, Amicus, all of these players in the field, we're trying to accomplish more available training, more available standard operating procedures, more available standards, industry standards that we can all follow so that things are written down and we're not all making it up as we go, so that we can share knowledge between companies. Because at this point, it benefits us all to grow better, not just faster. Fast is happening. That's inevitable. But we need to grow a little bit better. The main things that is being promoted by all these organizations is better communications between companies and as an industry, so that those standard operating procedures are shared and are common knowledge, and we can all stay safer, grow better, grow and just scale to the needs of the industry without losing a life, without losing a person, and with still having that return of investment, still having the assets perform the way they should.
Carl, can you talk a little bit about how SEI is bridging this gap and also the Women in Solar program?
Absolutely. So there's definitely the just general SEI training is going to help anybody and everybody enter this industry. If you want to start somewhere, that is a great place to start. You will learn about components. You will learn about what the industry is, what the technology is, how does it integrate with the grid. And also, if you're not sure where you want to go yet in your career, SEI courses can also help you figure that out. Hey, there's a little bit on sales. There's a little bit of micro hydro. There's a little bit of, obviously talking solar specific here. And in that term, there's design, there's installation, there's O&M. An SEI program can help you see a little bit of all of those and recognize which ones speak to you most and define what career path you want. Another angle is if you already know what you want to do, there are more specialized courses as well. And so you can choose to do that too. Lately, SEI and AES have partnered to create an O&M training program for entry level and onboarding, because that was a big gap that we saw at AES. And we were going to create our own program, our own training program, but then that only serves our technicians. And it's a little maybe too short-sighted when the whole industry needs this. And so what we did is we partnered with SEI and we've created this entry level onboarding O&M technician training that is going to be available to the public through SEI, I think within the next 3 months. So that would be maybe by August, September. I don't want to put a specific date. That's an SEI thing, but we can circle back and hopefully link it to the podcast. And this onboarding training program is going to help people enter the industry in the utility scale sector for O&M, which is one of the fastest growing sectors of the PV industry. And last but not least, we have the women's program. And the women's program is really my favorite. My favorite. Because I am a lady in solar and I know how difficult it can be to get into the trades and get into the technical area of solar as a woman and really get your hands on tools and on installations. And English is my second language, so sorry about the prepositions. So I know that it's difficult, and I am just honored to be an instructor for women. So the women's program is a path for women to reach out and say, I want training. And SEI is locating those scholarships and locating the partnerships, like with WEN, for example, to be able to fund these ladies' careers, which is so important, is to put the scholarships in the right hands, right? And so the program itself has some online components where you go through SEI courses that are for everybody. But the cherry on top of the cake, I think is the saying, is going to the training, the hands-on training that happens in the SEI lab yard in Peonia, Colorado, because that is a one-week training where it's all women instructors, all women students, and we just dive into the nuts and bolts, and we install two or three systems over the course of the week, and you have like such a safe space to be yourself, to ask any questions you have. We've had ladies that have never used a screwdriver before, and this is a safe space to learn how to do that. We've had ladies that come with a lot more experience, and they help each other out. And so it's a wonderful sorority that forms. I would say that's why it's my favorite.
Caro, I can't thank you enough for spending time with us today and, can we say, shining a light on the solar industry? We do like our puns here. But before you go, we can't let you go without getting to know a little bit more about you. So we have a series of fun questions. The idea is just to keep the answer short. First thing that comes to mind, you can explain or you don't have to. Just say whatever pops into your head. Caro, why don't you go first?
Caro, if you could share a meal with anyone, living or dead, who would they be? And it can be an individual or a group, but I'm just saying, we want to know who.
Or fiction.
Ooh, or fiction.
Anybody, anybody.
I would say I'd love to. You said a pizza? What did you say? It depends on what it is.
It's any type of food. Just a dinner, a meal. It could be pizza.
I would have beer and pizza with the Big Lebowski.
Oh, that's awesome. That is probably the most creative answer we've heard all this season. So,
the dude.
Awesome. Just chill with a beer with the dude.
That's amazing.
I'm embarrassed. That was the first thing that came up in my mind. I'm like, I love this character.
Don't be embarrassed. That's awesome. I'm jealous. I didn't come up with it.
He's so chill.
Yeah. Oh gosh, now I'm going to have all those quotes in my head from that movie.
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe this one goes along with that, or maybe it doesn't. Do you have a karaoke song? Or if you don't, what would it be?
I am not a fan of karaoke. And if I had to sing in karaoke, do you have more questions? I just am not a karaoke fan.
You bet. You bet. So if you had a warning label, what would yours say?
It would definitely not say tread carefully. I live open-heartedly and I will always be kind and you can come to me with whatever, but a warning label. Easy. Actually, don't expect me to be on time. I'm a professional procrastinator and I will disappoint.
Professional procrastinator. Watch out.
It's not a good trait, but it's a good warning.
It's okay. It's okay. So last but not least, and this is just general, it can be anything. It doesn't have to be related to what we've talked about, but what has been on your mind most recently that you would like to share with listeners?
I would say now that the season is changing back to spring, I am so excited and I've been basking in the rainforest and now in the desert is just getting out in nature. It's what I live for. I love it. It's why I live remotely in a little town in the middle of nowhere. And it's just, that's been on my mind, getting back into nature all the time, every single day.
There are studies, Caro, I don't know if you know this. There are studies that show after 3 days of being in nature away from technology, your mind has like reset back to a peaceful mindset. So it's called, you can look it up. It's called the 3 day effect. And there's an entire podcast series, like a short book series type thing on it. And it's on Spotify for sure. So I don't know where else it is, but the 3 day effect. Seriously, listening to it calms me down. Oh, and I'm not even in nature yet. So highly recommend it. Caro, I think with that, we've totally reached the end of today's journey. not just a normal journey, an enlightening journey, not just because of solar, but because of the resetting, right? And going back to nature. But really a heartfelt thank you. Thank you for guiding us through the fascinating world of solar energy. Hopefully we've sparked some interest in some of the energy team members out there. But to our listeners, we do hope this exploration has ignited your curiosity and fueled your passion for the possibilities within the solar sector, whether you're a seasoned professional, an aspiring enthusiast, or simply just someone eager to learn more. We appreciate your time and engagement. Please check out the Solar Energy International company website. We'll post it in the comment links below. And remember that we have a partnership with Solar Energy International, and WEN members can get a $50 discount for all of the PV, which is both in English and the FB Spanish trainings on their website through 2024. On-demand courses are excluded, so it does have to be the live versions of the courses. But check it out. We'll post more on it in the episode notes, and we look forward to hearing from you. Thank you so much, Caro. It was wonderful to talk with you.
Thank you. It was so much fun. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Until next time, take care.